Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, I am Brent Wyatt.
And I'm Michaela Wyatt.
That means we're married. We are here, and if you're listening right now, there's a really good chance that you already know us. But we are here because I think that we have a pretty unique story, one that needs to be told. I've felt that way for a long time, and we've tried reaching out and getting on different podcasts to be able to tell our story. There's been a couple that have fallen through, and so a month or so ago, I told Michaela, I said, we just need to record our story and put it out there by ourselves. So here we are. It's kind of progressed a little bit more into a little something more. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But for now, we're just going to tell our story. And we'll go from there. I don't think our story is super unique. I hope that everybody's able to kind of look back and reflect on their own lives and think that they have a pretty cool story also. And that's kind of our goal in all of this with what we're going to be doing, is to help others to be able to see that you're really special and that you have a story that others need to hear. So here we are. This is all kind of new to us and unique. And if you're listening to it, that means that it's available on podcast. And so that's kind of a little hint as to where this is going. So, but we can explain more and talk more about that a little bit later. So we'll start out kind of from the beginning. We met in high school. We were young and skinnier. we'll say less mature. How about that?
There you go. Lots of gray hairs too.
Yeah, Michaela told me yesterday that I got a haircut, and she's like, wow, you have a lot of gray hairs.
I like it. I think that it's cute.
Yeah. Plus, throughout this whole thing, you're going to get a whole lot of just us kind of talking back and forth. And we want to kind of show you what our relationship is really like, aside from the slapping here and there.
Oh, my gosh.
Just kidding. Okay, there won't be any of that. There's never any of that.
But you'll find out his humor is, pretty special.
Yeah. Okay, so we met super young, and to be honest, I'll speak for myself here, I fell in love very, very quick. In fact, I told her I was falling in love with her the very first night that we actually hung out. And if you're watching this, you can see why I fell in love so quick.
Whatever.
But yeah, it was, we were very much in love, and we knew that we wanted to be together forever. We were really young, and so there was a lot of growing up and stuff that had to happen in that process. Long story short, we dated off and on for 8 years. Before Michaela dated everyone else and then found out that I was who she needed to be with.
I had to just make sure that it was right. Right.
Yeah. And I was patient and I knew what I wanted. And I was fine with her figuring out what she wanted. there were some other things that came into play there that were big milestones or hurdles in our relationship that you could say. We won't really discuss that here. But so 8 years off and on, I was playing baseball, traveling the country, really. And Michaela, we got married the last 2 years while I was playing professional baseball. And so she was able to travel with me the last couple years. And by the time we finally got married, I was 26, I think.
Yeah, because I was 24.
Yeah. I had just turned 27 then. You were 24. Anyway, that doesn't matter. But so we had dated each other for a long time, right? We knew each other really, really well. One of the benefits of us dating as long as we did was that we really kind of molded each other into who we are, right? You do a lot of growing up from the time that you're 18 to 26, 27. And I wanted to be who Michaela wanted me to be, right? Who she needed me to be. And I think for her, the same thing. I think that's really important in a relationship is I want to be who I want to be, but I also want to and need to be who she needs me to be. And I think that's something that has really helped our relationship as we choose each other every day, every other day. Just kidding.
No, I was pretty stubborn when I was younger, though. I didn't necessarily choose Brent all the time. I like to choose myself, and that's why it took so long for us to finally get married. But yeah, we won't talk about that.
That's for a different story.
Yeah.
So we got married. We were traveling the country. I was playing baseball. We had talked, ever since we were first dating about our kids, right? We had names picked out very early on. Well, we'll say she had names picked out. I had little say in those. But no, it was something that we always discussed. We knew that we wanted a family. We hoped for a big family, big-ish. Not as big as the families that we're from, but, you know, we talked very early on that we wanted four kids in a perfect world, four boys and a girl. Three boys and a girl. Sorry. My math isn't mathing today. But that's what the goal was. However, we all know in life that when we make plans or goals, God kind of laughs sometimes. And so, yeah, our plans were not coming to fruition at all, really. We tried seriously having kids about a year into our marriage. Nothing was happening. We're both very much people of faith, and even in that early process, we just kind of assumed that if we were doing what we felt that God wanted us to do, that it would just kind of happen for us, right? I mean, is that right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to speak for you in this. No, so.
You're one. You know it just as much as I do.
So yeah, it was, I think, you know, a few months after trying, we kind of thought maybe there was something wrong. Michaela's mom had trouble getting pregnant. So we just kind of thought it was something similar that when it happened, it would just be bam, bam, bam. They would all kind of come. But the longer and longer it went, the more we kind of realized that maybe we needed to go see a doctor and try to get things figured out that way.
Well, and we also, Brendan mentioned though, like we were traveling a lot because he played professional baseball for the Detroit Tigers. And so we were like all over the place. One minute we're, cross country, and then the next we're back home, you know, for 6 months. And so we never really had that steady flow, and we would go to one doctor while we were, you know, in Florida, and then the next we were back in Washington, you know, for 6 months. So it was,
there was no real consistency.
And so we also got a little sidetracked because, you know, living in that world and traveling and him playing baseball and me, you know, on the side, just trying to, you know, work here and there. Like it did take us, you know, some time to really focus and take it seriously. So not that we weren't taking it seriously. It just
wasn't a huge concern.
Yeah.
Early on.
We just had faith that it would happen and in God's timing. And we were also young and having fun and traveling and making new friends and
very happy.
Yeah.
You know.
Very happy.
So my baseball career ended. And we moved back home. We were kind of trying to figure out what we were going to do, and decided to go back to school and kind of get going on the career path, right? The long-term career path. And in doing that, we saw more doctors. We were in Rexburg, Idaho, and we had a doctor who was very highly recommended. And we went and saw him, and I think the first visit, he told you he'd get you pregnant.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, yeah. And I've had many since.
Yeah, and that was, it kind of rubbed us the wrong way, I think. Obviously we wanted doctors that were confident and stuff, but in a way he made us feel like there really wasn't anything wrong and nothing to worry about. And so that was kind of reassuring, but at the same time, it wasn't very realistic at the time. And he didn't really run all of the proper tests that needed to be done. He just kind of took a quick glance and was very confident in his abilities. And we were young and didn't really know much. We'd never really known anybody super close to us that had gone through infertility issues. We were kind of navigating our own path, as far as that goes.
Well, and social media wasn't where it is now. And, you know, now you can find it anywhere and all the information and go on Facebook and, you know.
And reach out, and you can have dozens of people that have been through the same thing that you're going through. It wasn't really like that for us then. And again, we still just had faith, and we just knew that God would take care of us and give us a baby.
And the doctors were just here, you know, put you on Clomid and you'll be fine. And, you know, just a lot of promises that we were like really hopeful for, and the medications that I would have to be on, you know, it was terrible and really hard on, you know, mentally and physically, and, you know, the pain of all of it. And yeah, so that was like the band-aid, you know, here, let's just give you some medication and, you know, not really dig into the problem and the solution. So
yeah, so
a lot.
1 year turned into 3, and then 4, and then 5. And we knew there was really seriously issues. And in that process too, we weren't in Rexburg for a super long time. We had moved to the Tri-Cities in Washington, where we are now, and had gotten with another doctor. And he finally did some more significant tests, right? Deeper tests. Mm-hmm. And we had found out more of the issues of what was going on. Do you want to explain?
He basically, it was the first doctor that had really honestly diagnosed me with anything, because for so long it was so frustrating. Like Brent said, like we, every doctor had said, oh, there's nothing really wrong, you know, it's just timing. And so this doctor had ran the proper test. I went through so many testing, so much testing and, you know, testing my levels. And, so we found out, long story short, that I have what's called poor ovarian reserve. So when I am, if I am ovulating, it's like a hamster in a hamster wheel. You're just spinning like out of control.
Her ovaries.
And my ovaries. And so, but nothing was really producing. So my ovaries are like overworking themselves. But nothing's really like dropping when it should. And then also I, for a woman my age at the time that I was tested, I had, less than the normal amount of eggs, and also the quality of my eggs were poor. So I had, everything stacked against me. And we tested Brent, and he was like well over the amount that he should have been. So that's a little joke in our family, but
I'm pretty much more manly than any man, you know, basically.
Whatever. So, anyways, but yeah, it was a really hard thing to hear, and I think that, as a woman, you know, that is definitely something that you don't want to have to go through, especially knowing Brent for so long. I remember when we first started dating, and he was just, I knew that he was going to be the best father. Try not to cry, but you'll see a lot of me crying. But I knew that he was going to be a great father. I knew that that was a sight that I always wanted to see, because he's just a natural born coach and leader and teacher. And he, I just knew he would be an amazing father. And so to not be able to give him that one thing that I knew he would be so amazing at was heartbreaking. It still is to this day, even though, you know, we've been blessed so much. But he never once made me feel like it was my fault. Never once. And that's, I think, why we have stayed strong through these trials, and why we want to share our story, because not everyone is as fortunate as us. And yeah, I don't know if I'm missing anything else that you wanted to.
Well, in that, I mean, I think couples that go through infertility, when you finally get answers as to why, whether it's the wife or the husband, I think, like in my shoes, there was a part of me that was wishing it was me, right? I didn't want her to bear all of that. And I knew that she did. And I know that it was extremely difficult for her. And having to see her go through that month after month after month. You know, because even though we knew what the problem was, finally, like I said, we're still people of faith, and we know that God can perform miracles. And so every month we still were hoping for a miracle, right? And it's, I think when you have that hope, and when you're still hanging on to that hope, it makes every single month almost harder and harder and harder. And like I said, we are people of faith, and we go to a church. We go to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and it is very family oriented. And, you know, we fully believe that God's plan is a plan of a family. You know, He created the family unit. And for us, we had our family, right? But we'd go to church every week and we're learning different lessons about, you know, the family and different roles of a father and a husband and roles of a mother. And it was difficult to go to church every Sunday. And, you know, I'll be honest, there was lots of different points in our relationship and our marriage that we kind of asked each other, is it worth it? You know, we're doing everything that we believe that we should be doing for God, everything that He's asking us to do, but He's not giving us what we want. And looking back now, that's such a selfish and immature thing to say or think, but I know we're not alone in thinking like that. And I fully believe that it's okay to think that way. And in doing all that, we never lost faith in God. We never stopped talking to Him. I think our prayers could have been better and more frequent, for sure. But it's hard when you're in those moments and you're bitter and angry with God. And fortunately for us, we never got angry with each other. Infertility is something that can definitely put a wedge between couples and it can tear them apart. For us, I think it pulled us closer together. And I really think that it made our relationship with our Father in Heaven better. Even though, like I said, that was a little bit of a roller coaster, right? But there came a point where we had to make a decision, right? We were faced with either just continuing to pray and hope for a miracle, which I don't think we should ever stop doing. But we had to take action. It was either, our options were either adoption or IVF. And we kind of pursued both. Neither of us were opposed to adoption. I have a sister that decided to place a baby for adoption. And that was a miracle, just being able to witness that whole thing. And that's a whole nother story. That's, I'll come full circle and maybe we'll get to hear about that a little bit later.
A true blessing for yeah, sure.
That's her story to tell too. Yeah. That's not for us. But so we weren't opposed to adoption, but initially that, I don't think that was our first desired option. We desperately wanted a little Brent and Michaela, and you know, as I think everybody does. But again, looking back, that's kind of a little selfish way of thinking. And you'll see why a little bit later. But so we decided to pursue IVF. As many of you know, I'm sure IVF is very, very expensive. And we were young and didn't really get a career started for quite a while, just because of my pursuits of a big league career. I failed miserably. Just kidding. Well, I'm not kidding. I didn't make it to the big leagues. But so yeah, we were a little kind of behind the eight ball. We didn't have money for IVF. We started doing some fundraising and saving, and it took quite a while to be able to get basically $30,000 set aside for that. And so we were finally in a position where we thought that we were going to be doing IVF. And we get a phone call about a possible adoption. There was a little girl that was kind of a friend of a friend situation. We were told that basically this individual had the say. I think we got a call on a Friday,
maybe. Yeah, because we went on a Monday this year.
Yeah, I think. No, I'm not talking about Reese yet.
No, I know.
Okay. I think we got a call on a Friday. We were told that court was on Monday and that there could be a family that was picked on Monday for this little six-month-old little girl. We got to see a picture of her. She was beautiful. And I kind of fell in love immediately. That was the first time in the whole process where I had kind of let my guard down. Forever, I was just felt like I needed to be the support for Michaela and be there for her and be the strong one. And then we find out about this. And there was other times that we got calls, you know, all the time that somebody knows somebody and they might need this and that. But this was the first one that it was like, this could be real. You know, this, the possibilities were right there. And
tangible.
Yeah, we went and met with this individual and the meeting went really well. She made us feel like we were basically going to have a baby in a few days. And we were, again, young and naive. We didn't know how any of this stuff works. And we don't need to go into super deep details about things that were said or whatever. But we basically felt like we were going to have a baby. So we went out and got the baby room ready. We had to, Michaela was a massage therapist on the side, and so she had her massage room. So we had to strip all of that, painted the walls, got a crib.
Painted it from like a dark green to a bright pink or baby pink.
For this little girl.
Asked friends for cribs and dressers and donations.
Yeah, so in a matter of 24 hours, 48 hours, we had this room ready for her. And we got a phone call. I think it would have been on a Sunday. So the day before, there was supposed to be court. And we were told that she was going to go to somebody else. And that was crushing.
I don't think I've ever seen Brent. That was probably one of your lowest moments I've ever seen you. Couldn't eat, couldn't sleep.
I cried in ways that I'd never cried before like that. I didn't know. I'd never experienced that kind of hurt. And I think for once, that was the first time that I really could experience what it was like almost monthly for Michaela. And, you know, that's terrible. I experienced it one time, and I know that she's experienced that same pain and hurt time after time after time. You know, maybe not every month, but there's certain months, you know, where she's maybe a little bit late and, you know, she gets her hopes up and then a couple days later just crushed, right? And so that, as a husband, that is heartbreaking to have to see her go through that. And for the first time I experienced it. And I think that's partially why I was in such a funk, was because I realized that this is what Michaela deals with. You know, for the first time, my walls were down and I thought I was going to be a daddy. And and I think we both kind of mourned in our own way sometimes. We were definitely there for each other. That was the first time that I think, Michaela, you had to kind of be in my role.
I don't think I've ever seen you like that. And so I just felt like, okay, Michaela, you gotta step in gear. And, you know, we both put, I think, put each other, you know, first, and or not first, but like we put each other's in a, you know, each other's shoes, and realized like, okay, I think that's like the beautiful thing about our relationship and how marriage should be. Like, you know, we just support each other when we're down and try and lift each other up. And
you want to tell them about your conversation with God?
So as you can imagine, you know, being a woman and, you know, like already feeling like such a failure and like all the stories that the adversary can play on you. And, I just battled back and forth all the time. And, cause to be honest, it was like being a mother was the only thing that I ever felt like I was ever going to be good at. And, I just really, really battled with the thought of like, this is all I want, God. Like, why can't I have the one thing that I want? And through that process, what Brent didn't tell you is that it was a scam. And that whole adoption was a scam, and there wasn't another family. This lady basically was trying to get money out of people. She had already scammed people and got money out of them. And so to find that out, I mean, we were literally tortured back and forth. We would, you know, after he also didn't, you know, say this, and I know that we don't need to go into detail about it, but I mean, for a whole week after the supposed like trial, she told us, for one, that we weren't the family that was chosen. We didn't even know that there was another family when we met with her. And then we were told that, you know, she chose this other family to have the baby go to. And then like a day later, she said, you know, I just keep going back and forth. And, you know, I really do like you guys. And then she told us that we were the ones that, you know, she changed her mind. And it just kept going back and forth for like a week. So we were on this like roller coaster of emotions. And that final, we started putting pieces together and, you know, finding other families that had been scammed from her. And so when we finally realized that it was a scam and this whole situation was not even real, I really broke. And I, at the time, because Brent was going through so many emotions that I had never seen before, I knew that I had to be strong for him. And so he would go to work, and one day, you know, here's this beautiful little girl's room. Perfectly designed how I wanted it. And I put my grandma's like rocking chair in it that I had always wanted, that she rocked me in. And that was the one thing that I like wanted when she passed. And I fought hard for that rocking chair because so many people wanted it out of my family. And I even put my name on the bottom because she told me, like, honey, to put your name on it so that, you know, you get it. And I remember one day that Brent went to work, and I just went into that room because normally I just, after all of it, like, I couldn't go in there, and because it really was depressing. And I went in there and I sat down on that rocking chair and I just screamed, like, as loud as I could. And I was just screaming at God, like, why me? Like, why does this have to happen? Like, have I not been tortured enough? Like, because at that time it had been 8 years of infertility. And, you know, and I really don't think that people realize, like, especially with a brain like mine, I overthink things and I worry about things. And any little twitch that I would have, or, you know, period being late, like Brent said, like, I would think, you know, oh, it's time. And so I yelled and I screamed at him, and I just was really upset and mad. And I went through a really emotional time, and didn't understand at the time why he was putting me through, or why he was putting us through this torture. And then,
in that whole process too, right? When we're, and you all know what this is like, you all know what it's like to go through really difficult things. And I can't tell you how many times people would come up to us and say, God has a plan. You know, you just got to trust in God and this and that. And that's all very true. But when you're in the thick of it, that's not what you want to hear. And nothing against anybody that's ever said that to us or to anybody else. I mean, they're really trying to help. But that's not what you want to hear. I don't really, in those moments, I didn't care what God's plan was. Selfishly, right? I wanted what I wanted. And it's, again, having those thoughts and feelings, I don't think, like, looking back, I wish I wouldn't have had those thoughts and feelings, but at the same time, when you're in it, right? And you're feeling sorry for yourself, and you're angry at God, and why me, you know? I mean, we've all been there, but to have people come up to us and say, God has a plan, and just trust in God, it's like, I mean, what do you think we're doing? Those are the thoughts that I was having, right? And it's, but never always just saying thank you and stuff. And then one day we get a phone call from one of our best friends. Well, they're our best friends. but he calls me up, and we were going through it, right? And we were emotional. He was emotional. We were emotional. And he said, I don't know why this is happening. I don't know why you're going through what you're going through. But I want you to know that I'm sad with you, that I am mourning with you, and I'm here for you. And in that moment, that's exactly what we needed to hear. Not trying to fix it, just saying, I'm here. And in that moment, he was an angel for us. And I don't know if God prompted him to say what he said, but that's exactly what we needed to hear in that moment. And I never forgot that, and I will never forget it, that that comment in that moment changed my thought process. It changed who I am as a husband, that I don't always need to try to fix Michaela's hurt. I just need to be there for her and mourn with her, be sad with her, and just be a shoulder to cry on. And I'll never forget that. That's exactly what we needed. And that kind of gave us the little push forward that we needed to know that, hey, we're not alone. We have so many people around us that are here for us and want to help us and want to help lift us up and want to help give us the push that we need. And I always knew that before, right? But that was just, that's exactly the little wake-up call that I needed. And so we got back up, and I think shortly after that, Michaela, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm sure you remember it, but it was a couple weeks after you came to me and you said, I think, I know that God has something for us, and I think he just needed us to get going, right? To get ready for a baby. And that's what you said. And so after that, we had planned, we're going to proceed through with IVF, and we're just going to go with the plan that we had before, but now we have a room, right? God, we're ready, and we are moving. So give us what you got. And so we were going through, we found a place in New York with IVF that could somehow bill insurance, some stuff. So it made it significantly cheaper. So even flying over, it was going to be like half the cost. And we
him and his wife had gone through IVF. And so he knew how expensive it can be for couples. And so he really wanted to make his plans a lot cheaper. And so he was highly recommended. And so,
As far as the IVF goes, it was like a third of what everywhere else is. And then when you factor in the flights, it was still going to be like half as much. So we had different phone consults with them. We had a plan, and we had our first real consult scheduled where we were going to draw out a plan, come up with all the dates and everything, and just explain the whole process. And this was spring of 2020, early 2020. I think it was
February.
Well, yeah, February, where we had all this going on. But our first consult was going to be in March. And as you all know, spring of 2020 was COVID. And so we got a phone call literally a week before our consult. It was the end of March. And they told us that we can still do the consult, but just to let you know, because of everything going on, we can't start any new patients. We can't do anything other than phone conversations. So we were kind of let down, right? That was, here we are finally at the stage where we're ready to really do this IVF thing. And then we're told it's not going to happen. So we kind of crushed a little bit again, kind of feeling sorry for ourselves. And then a couple days later, we get another phone call. It was my mom. We were out getting takeout, right? We were trying to support local businesses and stuff, and we were trying different restaurants, trying to keep them afloat during COVID. So we were out getting takeout, and my mom calls me, and she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm just about to go get some food." She said, "Well, are you sitting down?" I was like, "Wait, what is this about?" In my mind, I thought my dad had a heart attack and something serious was wrong. Because my mom, there was some hesitation in her voice. She didn't know if she wanted to tell me what she was about to tell me. And I said, what's going on? She says, it's about a baby.
And the rest is for the next episode.
Okay. Here's a little cliffhanger.
So, in order to hear the rest of the story, you must head on over to episode 2.
Well, it's not dropping yet. We're doing one of these a week. So, you got to wait a week.
But by the time that they get it.
No, there's going to be one episode dropped a week. So if they're listening to this the day it comes out, then you got to wait a week. It'll be out next week whenever we decide to drop these. But yeah, so That's what we're going to do. We're going to tell our story. This is going to be kind of a three-part series, I guess, about our story and how we got to where we are. And then we're going to turn it into interviewing other people. You heard me talk about an angel in this episode, our good friend Kyle. I guess he's the angel of this episode. And we're going to talk about angels a lot. I fully believe that we are surrounded by angels, both seen and unseen. I believe that God uses angels. He uses us to answer prayers. And our goal in all of this is to get our listeners, our friends, people to start looking for angels in their lives. I know that I've had many, many experiences with mostly earthly angels. But there's been many times in my life where I have felt the presence of heavenly angels also. And I want you all to see the miracles in your life. I want you to know the Heavenly Father loves you and He wants to show off for you. He wants to show you that He's there daily. And I know that He will use angels in your lives, both seen and unseen. I want to end every episode with a truth, with bearing testimony. That's my testimony for today, is that you have angels in your life, and I hope you're able to look for them and see them. Michaela, what's something you know to be true?
I know that when we actively pray, and I don't think that it has to be a prayer that you normally think about. It can be, I think, even just talking to God, whether you're mad or you're sad, if you have to yell, like, do it. But He needs us, and He wants us to need Him. And so whatever that looks like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but talk to Him and really be specific in the things that you are asking. And I know that when we pray and we turn our, like, anger and frustration and try and figure out a way to ask Heavenly Father, like, what can we do more, you know, for you? He'll bless us. He's going to bless us no matter what. But when we actively pray and seek Him, we will see those blessings and see those angels.
Yep. And on another note, on top of what she just said, I fully believe that being angry with God is a way that we exercise faith. I don't necessarily think it's a good thing to be angry with God, but He would rather you yell at Him than not talk to Him at all. So that's a way to exercise faith. Well, I'm so excited to start this journey. I hope you'll stick around. If you know anybody that has a story that needs to be told, if you have a story that needs to be told, about angels, seen or unseen, let us know. And we'd love to talk with you and interview you and get you on the show. We're excited. This is brand new for us, but we're excited to see where it goes. And we fully believe that this is something that Heavenly Father has put in our path to get going. So, again, we're excited. We hope you stick around. See you next week.